每晚听你，后每晚听你，
他在听你，很辛苦的累，我工作，第三方提出来。I want to suggest that we call ourselves into order and begin. How much more time do we want? I'm talking to those who are going to make a presentation. Is it some time? Is it another minute? No, 1 minute. Only one. Has that the way to wave the thing and then.
Thank you very much. Honourable members and officials, and let's welcome the officials from the Department of International Relations and Cooperation. Are there any apologies?
Yes, Mr. Bergman.
Sorry?
Mr. Bergman. You call him Bergman.
Yeah, it's Bergman, so it's an accent. It sounds better. Okay. We note the and accept the apology of Honorable Bergman. Sultan, another one.
Thank you, Chef. The second one is from Honorable H. Shop.
Yes,
H. Shop.
Thank you.
Yes, yes. She was citing that she is suspended from Parliament. She was going to be elected.
Another one. Absent that one. Can you seem to accommodate developments with more tech and rules? Honorable Khadir.
Thank you. Honorable Shakafen, the problem is that the honor is in good health and the same will be more
people. Department?
Thank you, Honorable Chair. My name is Frau Marai, CDG for Free Management, assisted by Mrs. Daniel Tiengam, who represents Advocate Tibet as part of the delegation for the purpose of this question to the committee.
Are there no apologies from your political department?
Given
that you are presenting a bill. In the very presence of people.
I'm sorry, Chair. I really took that because they sent the apology directly through to the committee. I thought it was already communicated. We would like to apologize on behalf of the minister. She didn't sign honorable member is hosting the children counterpart.
Deputy Minister Mfeketo supporting Deputy President to receiving Palestinian President.
Oh, no, leave apart.
Okay, thank you very much. The apologies are noted and accepted. On number four, for the record, the spelling mistake there, the pattern. Written by the Department of Foreign Service B. What? Yeah, it's on Foreign Service B, not as a name of a department. So it means like that, for filing this thing, so it's by the government. Because for cool on the island, it's the correct here, then the next thing, you'll find the government.
Okay, no, sir.
Then the third one, I learned a lot on the wild and civil. I let her lay out there. So that's what we beg an alarm of it. We beg it. So you couldn't find it there.
Hey, no, sir. We won't find that one for the people of the years.
I'll keep it all. Let's hope. Over to BTC Mahwai.
Honorable Chair and honorable members, we thank you very much for this opportunity to come and present on the clause by clause on the bill. Without any waste of time, honorable members, by way of introduction, we'd like to present to this honorable committee that when this bill was first conceptualized, various legislative models and types within our context were explored. Initially, it was thought of just having a blown a bill or act that would become same as the legislation that is used in other sectors, but we were advised then that this would then have the effect of putting amendments to various aspects of, various legislation, and in particular the Public Service Act. We thought of how best we could go on and finally came to the realization that all what we would like to do is to give form and predictability in the context in which we operate, which does not have any legislation, and we sort of have this model that we are presenting to the honorable members. Honorable members, the long title of this bill provides for the management, administration, and functioning of the Foreign Service of the Republic of South Africa, as it is currently is. And that it provides for operational requirements that are suitable and supportive of the operations of the Foreign Service in a global environment and the measures incidental thereto. And we were hoping that in this long title would have then captured the essence of what we are working towards. So the bill as it is divided into 13 sections. Very short bill, as we believe it is a subsidiary bill. So first, the first clause there is definitions. Honorable members, we'd like to apologize to you. We take note of, in fact, we were woken up to the fact that in our definition, we did not follow the correct alphabetical order. If you look at the Director General and Department, it has undergone various changes and movements, and in the process we really, it was an oversight. We would like to accept that we really do not do our work well there. So, honorable member, the definitions that we have put there, as they are relevant to give explanations in terms of this bill, the most important of which for us was the fact that we have to now graduate from the mere branch of the department, which is called ETRD, to go for a full academy. We do provide the service through the branch, ETRD, but for the purpose of this bill, we are contemplating to have a full academy. And then we are defining it there, meaning the training unit, which is in existence currently, but which does not have the actual moment and the name of the academy. Then, for the sake of time, honorable chair members, I'll be guided because I may not have to go to everyone, but should it be necessary, I'll be fairly willing to save members the time. The the definition of employee was a very, it had upon various construction. We use what we currently have, which is all our employees currently who are transferred are persons appointed to the department or to any other national department in terms of the Public Service Act, including members of the Foreign Service contemplated in Section 2. We felt that in Section 2 we'll then elaborate on the actual composition, because it is not just only members appointed in terms of the Public Service Act. And then we then define foreign representations in the Republic, meaning as diplomatic missions, consular or liaison offices, as well as offices of international organization in the Republic accredited in terms of the Diplomatic Immunities and Privileges Act. These are the missions that we host. So, honorable members, having said that, we will go back to those that we feel, not just that we feel, but we can say it's time for you, but we'll still be called upon to go if we will do so. Head of mission, we mean an ambassador, high commissioner, consul general, our permanent representatives to the our multilateral organizations such as the UN and EU and other international organizations. And then locally recruited personnel, meaning all persons who are appointed in terms of the local laws of those countries to which where we are accredited. And our definition is a definition that is currently being used in our Foreign Service dispensation, where we derived it from. Meaning a person is a local resident in a foreign country and is employed by a department in that foreign country for the purpose of rendering support services to a South African mission. This we know because these are non-diplomats, if we may simplify it. They are not treated like diplomats, because even in our own country, the locals that are appointed in terms of our employment legislation, so we do the same. But we then subject them to our policies insofar they are not in violation of those countries. It's a dicey kind of situation, because it varies from a country to a country. But internationally, in the convention, they are recognized as such. As we said, honorable members, the member of the Foreign Service means any person who serves as a member of the Foreign Service and who is accredited to a foreign state as contemplated in Section 2. By the National Department, we refer to a National Department as referred to in Section 7, Subsection 2, Article A of the Public Service Act, and we include the South African Revenue Services, because they are also transferred officials from here. All the departments are in the schedule ABC in the Public Service Act there. Honorable members, we then have the South African mission, meaning now a diplomatic or consular mission of the Republic accredited to the foreign state where it is operating in terms of the conventions and the UN conventions, of the Vienna conventions and other UN conventions, or to permanent missions, which are mostly are permanent missions within missions to the international organization, and in this case in particular, the UN and AU. The department referred to here, honorable members, they are held listed in Schedule 1 of the Public Service Act and includes all the departments whose officials may become part of the public service, including the PTI, Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries, SSA, Department of Justice, and we distinguish SARS, which is why it is listed separately. So you notice that as the name SSA is not listed in the Act, it is still listed as South African Secret Service, which is an older name for it. Honorable members, going forward, we then come to the second clause, which will elaborate on the kind of definitions as we put there. And we submit to the Honorable Committee that we recognize the foreign service. It is already in existence. We call it by name sometimes in whatever form. Then we just give, we felt we shouldn't give effect to this, that which is already in place, which is why we would always repeat that. This bill is not inventing any new arrangement. It is only giving legislative effect to what is existing insofar as it cannot affect any other law of the country. We regard it as a base legislation that in future, should things happen, it can be broadened up to do. And the purpose of the Foreign Service is to promote and advance the international relations and cooperation of the Republic by representing the Republic in an effective, coherent and comprehensive manner abroad. It consists of all South African missions and of those persons who serve in a position in the South African missions and who are accredited to the foreign state for a period of time that they hold that position, our emphasis. So this clause, honorable members, says how the foreign service is made up and who are the members. And that it shows is the responsibility of the foreign service and the implementation of the Republic's foreign policy and for promoting the Republic's national interests and values in line with the foreign policy. We did not, we were advised not to just bring in the overall mandate of the department. It is a public service department, as we know, but this part of its area is the one that focuses on the operation abroad, and then, of course, in concert with the department as it office. So, by way of explanation, a member of the foreign service can be ordinarily employed by the department or by any other national department or appointed on a contractual basis for a fixed period. This is in the case where the head of mission or head of permanent mission are appointed from outside of the department as listed in the Act. We're providing for that one. They come in as contracted employees for the duration of their tour of duty. So as we said earlier, we emphasize that through the foreign service, the department is responsible for conducting and coordinating international relations. We have to say this because there is not yet any law in which the actual mandate of the department is given. The white paper process is aimed at elaborating on the mandate. As honorable members will know, it is a policy document that in future could also assist in refining our legislation. So we emphasize the fact that this foreign service is managed and administered by the department. We are making this distinction in order to very clarify what this element of our department should be, etc. Honorable members, I can step off from this clause 4. It's on head of mission. The head of mission is responsible for the management and administration of the mission, located as a mission, including locally recruited personnel. We are emphasizing this point, and the challenge here is that when a person is from DTI, sometimes we have a situation whereby they say, no, we are from DTI, who are you? That can happen at times. And they say, no, we report to our department. But we always have to emphasize that the only government department that is accredited, or which can be accredited, is the Department of International Relations or Department of Foreign Affairs. Anyone who serves in a mission of a country serves at the behalf of a department so established by that government and by the president of that country to do that. So we are re-emphasizing that in order to ensure that all transfer officials of life, irrespective of the fact that they might be coming from different departments, either attachés or as representatives to various organizations, etc. Perhaps one should explain a point earlier that I thought I missed. we use in the Forest Service part, we spoke of requirements, but this is actually will not refer to academic qualifications, but referring to the requirements of appropriate training for diplomats and security clearances. It is currently the case there. So, this is a practice as we speak, and we shall work like that, and we believe it is the law, and trying it that way, it will assist us to operate better. So in this clause 4, we take note of the fact that it is a prerogative of the president to appoint the head of missions. The constitution says that. Every law we are taught by our learned friends that should be subject to the constitution, etc. We therefore cannot superimpose anything to the constitution, only give effect to what it is. But once appointed, the head of mission then signs a performance agreement with the department and then serves in the department as such. Clause 5, honorable members, talk to the removal of members of the foreign service. This was a very, it was a clause that we had issues, and at the time the honorable minister tabled this bill to the meeting, we really took note and advised from this honorable committee that having not defined it earlier, it can mean anything. And we, as this is now out of our hands to the honorable committee, we could not, we have proposed a definition that we can share with the committee at the right time. We our emphasis here is that the member may be recalled to the Republic. We cite incidents that may trigger that. After an inquiry in the prescribed manner, and or when found guilty of misconduct, or pending the finalization of such inquiry. And we are looking here, we try to look at transfer versus recall. When people are transferred or are posted, we say we're transferring them out. When they are coming, when at the end of tour of duty, we're transferring them back. So recall in this context, as we will, and we will not impose our view of what it means, but we would want, we take note of the fact that the Public Service Act in Section 14 describes transfer in a standard way as it is done in the public interest, and then meaning to move someone from a specific position abroad to a specific position at that office. And they be done on the authority of the person having the power to transfer. But just looking at what the Public Service Act says, there is no reduction of salary okay, when a person is transferred. We say recall us from transfer, that a person is not recalled to take up a position at that office, but for another reason. And the reason could be either of the three. I'll do the two, which when the new definition or comes, will take care of. And then, as we know, the Public Service Act does not make provision for recall of officials. In case of recall, the employer, in terms of either a disciplinary code or procedure, which is a collective agreement entered in between the employer party and the employee party, or in case of SMS members, in terms of Chapter 7, which is a very same resolution that made a determination by the Ministry of Public Service and Administration. So there should be a disciplinary hearing where it is needed, and in this case, when a person is recalled, the convention of having 60 days, such as is what is used on suspension, will apply. Honorable members, this is in short the issues behind this clause and the fact that we are now going to have to take a recall in the definitions, and our proposed, now we will call it a proposal, we are saying a temporary or permanent withdrawal of a member of the foreign service from the missions where the member was stationed in accordance with clause 5, which is this law. So, So we will submit it when we're invited to something. We're just sharing it for the purpose of taking honorable members into confidence after we derive this wisdom from the very honorable committee when we were, during that time when we were to have six honorable members speaks to the diplomatic academy. As I say, currently we do not have a diplomatic academy, but we do have, it used to be called Foreign Service Institute, just like the nomenclature used abroad. But then it is operated as just a branch like my branch, which is corporate management. We currently call it DRD, Diplomatic Training, Research and Development. Now, when this deal comes along, we then have to have a full academy with all elements that should be there. And without delaying this committee, we would like to draw the committee members, honorable committee members, to the fact that we just gave in general the responsibilities of the academy. There is a proposed responsibilities of the diplomatic academy in respect of the training of both South African diplomats and foreign diplomats, especially from the continent, as it is done currently. During the consultation process, in our internal consultation process, the diplomatic academy was raised that aren't you defeating the end of the National School of Government? There was a concern, and we made sure that it did not overlap with the National School of Government, because the National School of Government is inward looking and it is based on the public service within the territory, the Republic's territory. And we did address those elements that everything that we do should be a supplementary effort, such as the different sectors, the justice college, all those kinds of institutions that are lookalike. So we will have to create that diplomatic academy as a full academy. Honorable members, clause 7 talks to the establishment of coordination and other mechanisms. Where we say the minister may establish consultative coordination and other mechanisms necessary for the effective execution of this clause. I notice in the Gazette make regulations or guidelines regarding this coordination and alignment of activities relating to international relations taking into consideration the intergovernmental relations framework, which gives effect to the cooperative governance that's enshrined in the Constitution. So we say in doing this, we will have to take into consideration the balance between spheres of government insofar as they operate in this area. Currently we have SACWIA, which is one of the bodies that is not in terms of any legislation or policy, which we hope once this act is in effect, then such factors will then fall under the ambit and be regulated through legislation so that the parameters are well defined. Honorable members, in the interest of time, I'll move to clause 8 on ASIC. Honorable members, we'd like to draw your attention to the fact that there is an arrangement that was done on 1 May 1999 in which the then Minister of Public Service and Administration, in terms of the powers vested in him as a Minister of Public Service and Administration, in which the mandate to manage and procure properties and accommodation abroad was officially granted to DECO. It hasn't been the case. So this mandate provides for all aspects regarding leasing, purchasing, disposal, and developments like that. So what we are proposing here is because that was an assignment in terms of that letter or program at that time, members, honorable members will notice that it was during the time the Public Service Commission was in a different context and therefore was responsible for the organizational structures and other functions of the department. It was in terms of that arrangement that this was done. So ever since then, there has never been any legislative effect or changes in this area. and therefore the Department of Public Works has not exercised this power ever since. Hence we have a division in DECO called IPM, International Property Management, which mostly the officials were drawn from Public Works among others, and the third are in DECO. So we will avail this assignment letter to the Honorable Committee so that it is made clear why we say now, why then shouldn't we give it a legislative effect, because it has been exercised over time, except that, of course, there were challenges in that there were no full mechanisms in ensuring that all the properties, especially from the former independent states, the auditing, or this came up during one consultation, of whether all the properties within that time were not under. That was close, eight honorable members.
What do you mean by independent? Is it city?
Yes. There's always a sense that the
former independent.
Oh, sorry.
Five. City state was not at that time. Yeah.
We apologize for that omission. Honorable Chair.
There's no omission.
I'm just making a small annual question. That it is better understandable when you say the former independent homeland, known as the PDVC state. You see, the state was a parliament that was used by the apartheid government, saying these are independent states. And otherwise, states are the frontline states and the others. And it, what catches us is when you say former, like the Susu, Muswan, and others, can't be former independent. Fine.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, on that one. Clause 9 talks of the policies, codes, directives, and decisions. May I bring to the attention of the Honorable Committee that in before 1999, actually before the amendment of the Public Service Act, there used to be what they call Star Code. And then in terms of our country, there is also a foreign service code. The staff code was repealed by the Public Service Regulation when they came into effect in 1999. Honorable members will ask what happened to the Foreign Service Code. It's still being used. Whether it is in, sometimes, most cases as an administrative tool, sometimes it is challenged constitutionally because of some of the excesses that may have been expressed there. This clause is aimed at saying now, the good elements from the code that have assisted us to run our mission could then be brought in line and give effect to even Chapter 10 of the Constitution, which is about public administration, all the nine principles there. Then we say, we are proposing that, and the other, currently, one of the, there is a, what we call, over and above the code, currently, we have a determination and directly on the foreign dispensation, foreign service dispensation, which was a negotiated collective agreement between the employee party and the Ministry of Public Service and Administration. We are currently in a situation in which we are, because it is this dispensation that has given rise to the conditions of service as we do, some of which currently people are even thinking they are too much or whatever the case may be. However, we are bound by it, because a collective agreement in terms of the Public Service Act, it becomes a determination. So even if we want to change certain things, we need to bargain with this one. So we are feeling that the codes, the policies, the directives that are currently being used, however they are, will need to be brought in line with what the national interest is and what the South African government and its law say, without necessarily undermining what was agreed to. So our view is that we because now with the PSCB, in which DECO is not, it is a negotiated center, it is a transversal bargaining council. We are, as DECO, we are only consulted. They will ask us, what is this that you need? What is about this one? We take it there. And this becomes binding because it is negotiated. We are party to the GPSSC. were categorized under general public service. Yet elements that fall square in arm are in the coordinated area. Now we are fighting with Kedari where they believe the way we calculate basket of goods to calculate cost of living adjustment is exorbitant, is what. It's not our making. It is a negotiated certain agreement, and yet it binds us anyway. So we like to bring it in mind and then say this clause should empower the minister to actually take over. This is a jurisdictional matter. It is a unique foreign service, when people are abroad, they can't come back to negotiate wherever they are, what they are feeling, wherever they are. When the missions are classified, people, there is nothing we can do. So we say that in the future regulations, in whatever, whether we call it code, whatever, we need to reclaim the mandate so that we can account on it. And then we made accountable of it. For now, we are implementing and only that. So this is where we are asking for and proposing this clauses there. Section 10 is a standard a matter regarding delegation. We currently use the delegation template and in terms of the Public Service Act. It is actually pre-framed. It's like section by section. There is nowhere there is a delegation to a commission. It's a delegation to a regional office or a department or an institution of the department as in the country. So there is no proper, there is nothing that we can point at as this is delegated in terms of da-da-da-da-da-da. So we have to be creative and always make sure that we live with the fact that no, a commission are delegated to procure up to this level. And in foreign currencies. No, the sum will be explicit in terms of other laws like the PSMA. But all those that are regulated in the Public Service Act, which are mostly domestic orientated, may not adequately find expression there. So those that are in terms of the, because the honorable members will notice, delegations is they are given as yours is to determine whether this one is delegable or not, and the conditions that are applied to it. So it carries all the elements of the Public Service Act and the regulation, very silent about our context, and therefore it has to be faced. So, honorable members, clause 11 relates to offense, and which was inserted later in the development of the bill, especially at cabinet, that where there is no offenses. And then we then inserted this clause to say, to bring it in line, of course, with existing legislation. A member of the Foreign Service may be prosecuted in the Republic for the offenses committed in the territory of a foreign state in accordance with Section 110A. Of the Criminal Procedure Act. Honorable members of the BESIN, the Criminal Procedure Act, Section 110, talks to jurisdictions in respect of offenses committed by certain persons outside the Republic. All what we did here was to align that with the situation in which we find ourselves. And it also gives us an opportunity, because in terms of the international convention, people are given immunities. Especially employees who are diplomats, classified as diplomats. Both are the UN immunities and immunities of the local law. So as a result, sometimes, for example, as we speak, we have a case where an employee wants to take one of our health commission to court, an LRP, and then in terms of the laws of that country, they may have to go and subpoena or do whatever they want to do. And the head of mission enjoys immunity. While we don't say we should be immune from violating legal laws, etc., but the element of saving that needs to be negotiated. So in this case, in the event when a person has committed an offense, if you only rely on the Criminal Procedure Act, it may not be sufficient in cases where you have to deal with immunity. We therefore felt it is better to bring it here in order for us to be empowered to use this element of the Criminal Procedure Act to deal with matters in which immunity could have delayed and or affected our performance of this task. Furthermore, this one my colleague will also explain because it was taken elsewhere, it was brought in and based on other matters of the law. Any person or a member of the police or of the foreign service or employee of the government who in a willful or negligent manner contravenes or fails to comply with the provisions of this act. And my emphasis of this act, not any other, but of this act or its regulations when they are there, is guilty of an offense liable on a conviction of a fine not exceeding 50,000 rand or imprisonment for a period not exceeding 1 year in relation to those things that are regulated by this bill. Any other will be determined by the law. So she will have to explain why we arrived at this small onion or big onion figure. Honorable members, the most important bill here, clause there is regulation. The remaking of regulations. And the regulations, as we say, may make regulations regarding the transfer of a member of the Foreign Service, conditions of service that we alluded to earlier where we said we want to reclaim this area. And then training requirements prescribed all that members of the Foreign Service are required to take before taking up positions. Security requirements of the Foreign Service in consultation with the Minister of State Security. Currently we are relying on the Strategic National Intelligence Act, which is what prescribes that a person who takes off position abroad on behalf of government must have got a security competence at security clearance, a top secret. So we are using that now. We don't have any mandate because the Public Service Act does not prescribe that. And I can assure members that sometimes we get so challenged that we rely on the goodwill of the people because the minimum entry requirements that do not go as far as this, which is our source of employment legislation currently, do not even get there. So this is where we believe that then we can bring it home and be able to implement it. There is a point where we say regulation made in terms of this section with reference to members of the Foreign and members of the Foreign Service need not be published in the Gazette, but must be notified to all to whom it applies. During the briefing, during the tabling, there was a question in respect of this matter. And we would like to just use this opportunity, Honorable Members, to explain why it is like this. We are taking into consideration that the publishing of any regulations in a Gazette is a very important matter. However, in the area in which we operate, there are sensitivities, national interest matters, other matters, we operate in a world characterized by national interests that are in conflict. And anything that you can do may sacrifice your own territorial integrity, if I may call it. So we say, while we take note of the fact that in the course of events, gazetting should take place, but in instances where these regulations are talking to those elements that I've given examples of, we are saying the legislation should enable the minister not to necessarily take them out. It's a standard international practice, and we needed to explain the reason why, and the committee, so the Honorable Committee will make a determination. The last clause, Honorable Members, and I'm sorry I've taken all your time. I'm trying to be short, but it's difficult to become short. And this is an opportunity. It's a short title and commitment. May I thank the Honorable Chairman for having allowed us to make this presentation. I submit.
Thank you very much, DCC Makwai. When I assumed the chairship of this committee, I actually sent with shot. And also disability. We said much words like goodnesses and all those things. You know, when they, so short is not, using short is not allowed in the comment. On a serious note, thank you very much for your presentation. In fact, as a committee, we should congratulate your directorate and the whole department for piloting this legislation. I'm told that it is the first of its kind since 1984. And of course, we need some kind of a, because when I was trying to look at the strategic intent there, we need a rather concise strategic intent of what the bill seeks to do. Something in one line or in two lines. Just to make it catchy in the public domain. Bring this because it will do this. I know the other things are actually kind of explanatory, but a line that can be catchy, particularly for the purpose of our communications officer, because we would want to say in the public domain, we've received this bill, its strategic intent is this and that, and then unfold other processes. I'm sorry to have taken this space that actually belongs to the members. So I want to invite the comments. I was told that you must also join the Rules Committee. So let me start with you. Honorable Khadebe, followed by Kalapa.
Chairperson, I concur with you that you appreciate this presentation. But I think that this is the first bite, you know, not just the second bite. Well, the first part was introduced by the minister, sometimes back in the chief plan. This is the second bite, but I think that now it opens us for us to deal with it at the committee level. What I'm interested in sharing is the program which we're going to lay out and how we're going to deal with this bill. Then. Because there are a lot of things which are involved here, there are a lot of elevations your person has, although it's got strategic, that is taking our foreign service to the higher level. But at the same time, we can see that there are a lot of loopholes or lacunas in between here. But I think that on our side, Chair, we are going to appeal to you that if we can have consultations on the side of the committee, because I think that the presentation for us now is our product. It being our product, what we need to do is that we can recraft it from afresh, where we can see that it is not going to work. But I think what is critical here, I think the GTG acknowledged that there are certain, you know, when you come to your drafting of the law, as he said that the definitions are not in alphabetical order. There are certain omissions which are made. And then you take, for example, just like the issue of the other departments affected. Today, I can see that somewhere they say they were consulted. But I think that for our sake, I think that we must help those people from the other side. Take them, Mr. Kiyam. The DTG referred to a minute which was done by the Minister of Public Service in 1999. Kiyama came in 2007. Although this thing was done from 1999, but until 2007, there was no Kiyama Act, Government-wide Immovable Asset Management Act. It was not there. So I think that they must have been shifting so that if the Department of Public Works didn't apply the Kiyama, why did you have it in the first instance if they are going to make those omissions? So if necessary, we have to call them in so that at the end of the day, we don't have a problem. I can see that there are also collective bargaining issues which they spoke about, about the codes. I think that even the unions which are affected, we must call them in because it's not reflected. We must call them in so that we must be able that the product should come out with at the end of the day is able to be with a friend for everyone across the board. Because it's going to be of no use that we craft a law which is going to be resisted in its first implementation by the people who are supposed to benefit from it. and make the issue of the Provident Fund. You know, we went through the proper process as Parliament, did what it places us. But on the eve of its interpretation, you find that the workers who are affected just kicked it out. You know. So I think that we must need, from the side chair, that the people who were consulted, even the unions who are part of that, they must come and tell us, you know, as the community, how far do they agree with this code, which is foreign code which they're speaking about. Where is that foreign code? What does it consist of? What are the elements inside there? Those are the things we are going to need so that we can process it, but not by force. I also would have expected, Chairperson, on the issue of offences, you know, by the nature of the Foreign Service, you know, Chairperson, is that we are putting the national interest of South Africa outside there. We expect everyone, because I can say there's an old situation, but what's going to happen to the person who does not honor that oath? Instead, he sells the secrets of the country. He sells the country after hours. That person could be fined 50,000 when the technology or what is passed over to the foreign agent is about 5 billion. Now I can go through this issue of people, nuclear design. It was our thing, but it was stolen. It was stolen, the fact. But it was not stolen inside the country. But what happens if such a technology is sold by our agents instead of marketing it outside for the benefit of the country? That person sells that thing to the foreign agent. With 5,000 rarely, something 10 billion US dollars, 50,000, even a better man can keep me for a drink.
What is the pleasure?
The essence of the matter is, you can see that these guys are equal to top secrets of the country, of which they can be compromised. I think both the issue of the vaccine is not far enough. But I understand that it's not the cabinet which demanded that. You know? But I think that we must compare what the other country. You know that guy who's in London, that guy of WikiLeaks. You know? I'm telling you, yeah, they didn't want him. You know? They still want him high and low. Né? But why are we so quiet about me as South African state? We're not stringent enough, né? But it's something for the other day. I think the issue of sanctions, of offenses, we must comply with other countries. What do they do? Né? What do they do about that? But it's hard for us to call them in. It's necessary. Calling the state authority. How does the other people deal with such a thing? Or whatever it is. But this is a good start, I think, that must support it. You know? But then it's up to us how we take it forward. And even the costing thereof, you know, the costing thereof, there's some sort of costing taking in, which is going to be indicated here. You know? The diplomatic academy, the state has, you know, that we've got agricultural colleges. We can have a diplomatic academy, but we must put it in line with what is happening in the country. Chair, I think that this is a drop, which is good, but it can be improved.
Thank you very much, Honorable Kadema, for your worthy contribution. Honorable Mukhalapa.
Thank you very much, Chair. I agree wholeheartedly with what Honorable Hadema said, except for the lesser comments. There might be a disclaimer there. Everything that he said, I agree with just the exception. But yes, definitely,
the policy now I have now, it's work in progress. And we cannot be very much negligent on this one. It's a serious bill that we need to do, because definitely it touches on the image of the country abroad, and it touches on the issue of the national interest. And we have to make sure that we beef it up. But I think there's a job that we got to do. It's now in our left. We got to run with it. Because if I've looked at the practice that you send us, and I've seen in those countries, they were very explicit in some of these things, and they were very much determining what it means. I'm not sure if the devil will be in the regulations as opposed to the bill itself, but I think we have to assist the regulations that are going to be made by the minister to make sure that the bill itself is very much spot on. And I agree with Honorable Hayabani, especially when it comes to the sanctions. The people who work in this environment, definitely, they in some countries, some of them have caused war by miscommunication, you know, and misinterpretation of effects. So it's a very serious field that we operate on.
The issue that we will need to deal with, we'll have to classify and amplify what are the prescribed requirements that we're talking about. What exceptions are we talking about when we talk exceptions? And also speak to our sister departments who are involved here, because we definitely need their buy-in, especially in terms of the attaches and making sure that there's no gray area and that the law will apply wholeheartedly. If an offense is done by a defense attache or a trade and industry attache, it goes to the same budget. It doesn't say, no, I'm now going to public service, I'm not part, I was not hired by DICO, but I'm hired by trade and industry or by defense or home affairs. Why must I subject myself to disciplinary services of DICO? So we got to be explicit on those as well to make sure that the issue has, and I think I agree with this issue of the public service that we need to look at in terms of the asset management. As you know, the bone of contention with the Auditor General is the issue of assets. And I would want clarity on the Ministry vis-à-vis the Director General, because the Director General is the accounting officer and the Ministry is the political head. So who is accountable on that? And what would be the rationale having the Minister, who is a political head, being involved in leasing and property? And I can understand the political ramifications coming from the scandal, but in terms of legislation moving forward, what would be the difference between the DG and the Ministry in terms of responsibility for asset management? And yes, we will debate the issue of the recall and the transfer. You know, there is this nice way that you've put temporary or permanent removal. And I don't think that a temporary or permanent removal will constitute a transfer, because of there might be a gray area in terms of what happens in terms of the... I like the call. It sounded quite harsh, but it's what it is required in terms of the... And in terms of the status of the academy, currently it's an institute, you go through training and then you go informal and everything. Does that mean that now being a academy, it will mean a formal process of looking for accreditation as a training institute? And what would be the level of that accreditation? What would it mean when you got that accreditation? And it's quite good, because of one thing that we have to put across explicitly is the difference between the diplomats, career diplomats as well as political appointments, because of we got to be explicit in terms of the processes and the requirements moving forward, because of at this point in time, we're just doing it in terms of, I think political appointments only. And I think on para-diplomacy, yes, clause 7, I think definitely it's one thing that Honorable Hajabe is quite, I think the provinces and the nation and the municipalities need to be hooked in, in this one. I know that it will be a lengthy process to get all of them, but I think there can be a way that we can deal with it, as far as, you know, making sure that they understand the coordination and the reasons why we are doing that coordination. Yes, and I think that the issue with the national department, the other national departments, needs to be very much stringent and classified. And you know, on the offences, I think when I spend more time, I guess, when we get to discussing the integrity of the bill in terms of the issue of waive of immunity, because you know, some of the things that are being offences that are committed abroad, some countries would say, please waive this immunity. We want this man to be prosecuted here because of the severity of the offense that he made. And now we are saying that that person will be tried back home here. So it's those things that we need to spend time on. And I agree with the fine. I mean, the 50,000 is quite a slap in the face compared to the offense that he... diplomats can do, and we've got to be clear on whether these offences apply to senior diplomats, meaning the High Commissioner or the Ambassador or the Consul General, and also on the junior staff. So is it applicable across the whole human resource chain? Because it's very important. Someone can say, I'm just the reception is there or the tide is there. Some of these things don't apply. And I think you've mentioned one classical example where an LRP is taking the head of mission to court. How do you deal with such matters? If a case is a very strong case, you know, it might be a rape case, and which is I'm not saying the specific one, I'm just saying an example. It might be a rape case, and then what will happen in that case, as we know in South African law, we're quite harsh when it comes to that, and in another country they might want to do something even more. How do we deal with that? I think the devil will be in the issue of the regulations. The security requirements, I think we've got to be explicit on what do we mean by security requirements, what will it include, and then I think the state security would assist in that way, in saying what do we do. But the issue, that will going to come, but it will be on the regulations, it's on the government issue. Anything that you have government, you can say. So what will happen? We need to clarify which ones would be, gazetted to the public, and so that we don't seem to be trying to circumvent. Me and you would understand why some of them would not necessarily be gazetted because of the sensitivity of some of them. But the general principle is that you always need to gazette, and you know. So I think. In general, we still got a lot of work to do moving forward. There are a lot of loopholes that we need to fill in and that we need to ensure that we get close. But this is an initial process. There's still a long way to go. And we got to make sure that we assist and make sure that some of those concerns that will be coming from the process and process work on. So that is my initial comment here. And I think moving the process forward would be a very much lengthy process that will engage your point. Thank you very much, Jim.
Thank you very much, the Deputy Director General, for your presentation. And I think really, Kim Shiba also like this. And with the Ubuntu attribute that South Africa is having, the Ubuntu policy and of touching the world, and what kind of a person that can be able to complement those attributes, I think it says that. And as that Dame Halaka has alluded, it's a work in progress. And however, we will have to benchmark with other countries that share the same aspiration or same goals as us. But we are really thankful for the presentation that you brought forward today. So that we can be able to fine-tune, to keep more and more, and then come with the proper kind of a document. I thank you.
Honorable Maila, thanks very much, thanks, Dr. Morel, for the presentation. As other colleagues have already said, this is work in progress, and we have to put more effort to ensure that we come out with a fine-tuned product. But mine was on the issue of benchmarking and best practice. I just want to check, because as we benchmark most of the time, we go to Europe, we go to America. Are we saying in Africa there is nobody who is up to scratch? Can we at least maybe get two countries in Africa that we can learn from, then if there are gaps, learn from even those gaps that we can be able to fill. But otherwise, thanks very much for what you have started, which will give us space to actually work on. Thanks very much.
I I'm the chairperson. So the chairperson has just taken the cut. So can you please listen to the chair? Honorable, any other question to ask? Thank you.
Honorable Habib started the process by saying that we need to do a proper comparative study. When I look at the notes, I can see that only Canada and the Philippines are there, and all of the speakers indicated that, you know, we should be doing that. But I just wondered if it were not something that the committee would consider a study tour after the election to perhaps visit one or two places and interact with parliamentarians there and our committees in those parliaments to see, you know, what they're doing. It would guide us. You know, you've introduced the bill, we've looked at it, we can see from our perspective where it needs tweaking. But if you interact with other parliamentarians, you may get another perspective. And, you know, we're saying best practice, but let's also hear what worst practice is. Because we're making legislation, and you don't want to make legislation and have to amend it 5 minutes later. So that is my contribution.
The chairperson is back. It was honorable Kenyan. And now you guys can go back.
Thank you very much, Honorable Rapport. As let me indicate that we had released the other honorable member. Honorable Darlene is attending the Rules Committee. Mm-hmm. And the Honorable Rapport, Umluan, is also attending the Rules Committee. And Honorable Khadebe, all of them are attending the Rules Committee. There is one sense of agency about attending to the Rules Committee here in Parliament. So I just thought I must indicate that. And I want to thank the members for your presentations and for your contributions. There isn't much that I could say. Let me just say a few, so that when we discuss later what is called national interest, I think somewhere in your presentation you just got into that word. Will it be the common understanding of all the departments that what constitutes national interest is national interest of government, in terms of diplomatic services, in terms of state security, in terms of territorial security, and all of that, you see. And I think the question about the 50,000 has already been spoken about. But there is this thing called industrial espionage that happens all over the world. And perhaps today we should talk about not just that, maybe it's covered, but technological espionage, if I may. Perhaps it falls under this one, where someone could be developing a particular instrument or an engine of a car or any other thing, or cyber crime, or a product. The next thing, he goes to another country, or she goes to another country, is sold to that country, then it's patented by the country as their own. I'm told that countries that have money are actually good at buying grain from the other developed countries.
I see that when we have not discussed the Vienna Convention, have you noticed that so many a times we use the word diplomatic agent?
Mm.
Well, it's a convention crafted in 1961. Agent. Because you see, agent for me is different from a representative, a diplomatic representative or diplomat. But when someone does certain things and says, but I'm an agent anyway. Yeah, well, look at it, we'll have a discussion some other day. I'm just saying, that's at that time. The last one, the recall of a member, but not quite on the recall itself, but on the commission of a crime by another state where they go and assassinate dissidents. To be practical, you go to Rwanda. Rwanda. Some people assassinated dissidents, political activists, way in South Africa. And when we made a diplomatic protest, we threw some people, they also expelled us. Then there was a standoff. I'm not sure if it has since been solved, but the issue is the people who did this thing. Now, if you wanted to arrest them and you have no extradition, and we seem to be saying that if you commit an offense in another country, we'll tell you as if the crime was committed in South Africa. Yeah? There's a line that I saw. Now, I thought that to the extent that the crime is committed within the nation, it's South African territory, even if it is in France. But what will happen if you get a car accident and somebody dies, and usually car accident is called a culpable homicide because it's without intention. And in that country cannot prosecute you. You must come and be tried in South Africa. What if it's murder, like the one that I was referring to? And there's no extradition. Yeah, I just thought I should raise those few. Then you can go to town and explain. You have 10 minutes. Over to you.
Honorable
Chief. I'm going to invite the announcement from you on the process.
Oh.
Or you have to come after.
Even before the time.
Okay. Over to you, DJ.
May I request my colleague to take some of the questions?
Thank you very much, DJ. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. Our purpose here today is to assist you as to our thinking in presenting. We weren't family as far as I'm aware. So But you're not the first person to have that, Honorable Chair, actually. our purpose is to assist, so if there is anything, please, we can explain our thinking in presenting this book. One question that has come up quite a lot is the question about the offences. And from our point of view, the way that we crafted it when we sat down and we drafted this, is we wanted to distinguish between offences such as espionage and murder and all of those types of offences, and then an offence of something that is dictated by the bill itself. So the first part of the offences clause, which refers to the Criminal Procedure Act, will cover all of those sorts of espionage, murder, all of those serious crimes that are committed, if they are committed abroad by diplomats. It gives the South African legal system the power to come and to prosecute the person in South Africa for espionage and for murder and for or culpable homicide, whatever the crime is. And then the normal rules in relation to those crimes will apply. So, for example, if someone is prosecuted for treason, the penalty for that would be life imprisonment. It would be 50,000 rand fine. The 50,000 rand fine in this case is more if, for example, someone refuses to, if someone contravenes this act, so if someone from a civil department, for example, refuses to report to the head of mission, that is a violation of this act, and that is now a crime in terms of the second part of the clause, and it is punishable by a maximum of 50,000 rand or 1 year imprisonment, which puts a whole different spin or a meaning to the 50,000 rand. It actually, what we, our thinking was at the time was that for something like defying the head of mission or not reporting, or for we often have a simple example to give you is that we often have problems with the departments communicating directly with missions, where we as DOCO have no input and we don't know what's happening, and then after the fact the mission comes to us and says, but we've been communicating with you, sister department, and then we've got a knowledge of that, and we that is now regulated by the bill provides that DOCO will be responsible for communications. A contravention of that will be an offence and can be punished by up to 50,000 rand or year imprisonment. So that is the decision that we tried to make. Obviously, we welcome your input and your changes to that as you see fit, but that was our thinking in doing that. And then if I may address the issue of that the Honourable Chair now talked about the example of Rwanda, or a crime that is committed in South Africa versus a crime that's committed in the mission versus a crime that's committed abroad. In terms of criminal law, a crime that is committed in South Africa, the South African legal system will always have the right to deal with that. So if someone comes, then they commit a murder in South Africa, regardless of what nationality they hold, the South African legal system will have the right, based on the fact that the crime was committed in South Africa, to deal with that matter. Where a crime is committed in mission, my understanding of the Honourable Chair is that you are right, that is South African territory, so in other words, South African procedures will apply. If it is a car accident and someone is accidentally killed, and then that, of course, is a crime that's committed on the territory of another country. The other country will have the right to ask us to waive the immunity of the diplomat. We can then decide whether we will waive or not. My understanding is that the policy, and DDG, you may bring her better, that my understanding of the policy is that we do not waive generally unless there's a specific reason. But as a general rule, we do not waive immunity. We rather recall the person to South Africa to face disciplinary charges in South Africa. And then obviously in terms of the offences clause, the Criminal Procedure Act will then also give the option to the NPA to also prosecute this person for the crime that was committed abroad. Is there another issue, DG, that you want me to address? If I may just make some short comments on some of the comments from the members, I think from our point of view, we welcome any consultation, obviously, that this committee wants to further do. We can, if it would help the committee, provide a timeline of the consultations that DOCO has already done in preparing this draft, to show you who we have consulted with at various times. If it would be helpful, we can make this available to you. And then the issue of the regulations has been brought up a few times. We want to, our purpose is not to go and I'll give teeth to the bill or to the act as it will be at that point, hopefully, and without anyone's input. It's not our purpose to circumvent anyone in this process. So generally, from a legal point of view, it is easier to amend regulations, which is why a lot of the issues that we deal with, that needs to be dealt with in the regulations, from our thinking was it would be more appropriate in the regulations, because if we need to adjust the cost of living adjustment, it's easier to do that in the regulations rather than to amend the Act. Or if we need to anything of those practical day-to-day sort of running of the missions, the diplomatic situation abroad, all of those things are easier and more efficient to do that through regulation and to make changes where necessary, rather than to have to amend the Act every single time.
For the chairs, yes, I think my colleague, Honorable Member, has answered quite more. One of the countries that Honorable Members may want to consider looking at is a newbie, it is Kenya. They have a very thick, in fact, we can even share the bill or the act before members, Honorable Members may want to go, because it's more or less, most of the countries did not have this kind of law, essentially, to be honest. Except well-established democracy, even though it was on a very different context. But it is true that a comparative, a thorough, have an advantage to have a thorough comparative analysis, so that at the end of the day, there is a big balance, and this will really help us. The other thing is that with regard to regulations, the regulations are the byproduct of this. Even though they are supposed to be done elsewhere, my sense is that they cannot be done away from the oversight power of this committee. But we may even maybe propose that as the committee in future find an in principle final, not final, a product, can instruct us to start sharing the process of what should be in the regulations, including sharing these. You know, the code is like a club of documents, like it can fill the whole table here. We pick it, it is made up of chapters like this, old staff code, if Honorable Members remember. So it's where we pick and choose what we can use, etc. So we would have preferred to have a process where, as the Honorable Committee is dealing with the gist of the bill, and essentially we start to creep in some of the features of the regulations which the Honorable Committee will have the privilege to oversee and where possible I believe it is possible. And then maybe the last, with regard to the asset, the matter of the assets, the immovable assets, the letter that are referring to Honorable Members are in terms of the Public Service Act, and for the purposes of law, it is just that was the power vested in that way, but it doesn't stop us from pursuing and looking at it. Kiama essentially is there to mostly to provide reform frameworks, and then for the management of immovable assets. That's why we put a qualifier to say notwithstanding this framework. As the case has been that the power was actually, if I may use the right word, given to the department, it is not in contradiction. We believe it's not in the contradiction of the in contradiction. Where it says minister of vis-a-vis DG, I've not thought about that, but essentially the custodial responsibilities will remain with the political principle, but the accountability thereof will then be vested in DGS and accounting officer. Of course, because it just came to my mind, and we will check what is the balance there, and as the Honorable Committee will be involved, we'll then see why, maybe my colleague would have seen it from the legal point of view, but we take note of the letter. Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, we hope most of the comments we note at them, we will be willing to work with the committee until every time where we need it to be something, do something, we'll do that, and then we'll partner, because we believe you, this committee will be the one that will be the midwife to this. Therefore, we only put proposals, but we are not lawmakers. And I believe even our minister is a member of parliament, etc. We support in proposing. we just feel that history will be made by the honorable member, and we really appreciate the fact that it seems as very urgent, because indeed the things we're talking about here are currently challenges. Have elaborated on them. We're trying to legislate the things we are doing without legislation, discussed, among others. And the catchy statement the honorable chair alluded to, I don't know, we may want to exchange those views for that to happen, because it's really true that we really need to, in a sentence or a line, to present that what the honorable chair referred to, as if I still remember, to make this catchy by just showing a strategic intent. We'll look at it, and if allowed, we can then bounce it off before we finalize. But we believe running through this process, it will be one of the kind of... I visited the silent embassy a week ago. They are 400 years old. They don't have a law like this. But they were asking the reason we were receiving them. The credential, this is the way ahead we are doing the foreign service. Can we share? The stage we can't share because it's done in Parliament. So all the challenges and problems that we experience, and all findings in particular, arise from the legislative basis in a number of ways. And therefore, this is an opportunity to get a grant from which we can operate a unique and peculiar service such as this one. Honorable Chair and honorable members, thank you.
Thank you very much, DDG. Is there any addition you want to make?
Thank you, Chairman. Honorable Chair, I think that... that covered most of the comments that I noted. If there's any further clarification that the committee would like, we'd be happy to provide it.
Yes, indeed, Chairman. Now, my wife will be midwife to the discussion and ultimate passage of this act. In the early 90s, the chairperson of my branch in the AV was the school principal, an elderly woman, highly respected and well educated. Now, even when people introduced this palace of 10%, people insisted that she's our chairman. not because because they just didn't understand what is a chairman. The person sitting in a chair. No, our chairman, the chairman. They just insisted on it. So I don't know what happens if you are a man and you midwife something. Sit the mail over to you, and then we'll just make it on.
Thank you, Chairman.
Mine
is on the comparisons and the best practices that members were suggesting. To say, indeed, when I first look at the bill, it's I was comparing with what the department benchmarked with when they were drawing up the bill. Hence, you have the countries that the bill from the countries that we have at the moment, but. It's absolutely in the prerogative of the committee to actually look further, to compare with more, and so that it's well informed. And also, on top of that, that issue of the study tour is also complementary to the work that the committee needs to do before finalizing the deal. And Lubabalo is going to talk of submissions. The process is from now to... Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, in brief, just to outline the process and to the best of my ability, the time frame. The following the meeting of today will be an advertisement of the AVET in all South African languages, and we've covered almost all provinces. Which according to the rules of Parliament and the Constitution is reasonable public participation and consultation. And following that, myself and my colleagues will be summarizing the submissions during the period of the constituency. And then with the consultation with the chair, look for a date where members will interrogate submissions. That's in the form of public hearings, where certain organizations will be called in, and possibly other departments which are affected in this bill. And then it will be up to the committee whether it will, after the public deliberate, or before that, we'll go open a study tour, and it was suggested by members, also guided by the parliamentary program. And then after this, if the study tour, the committee will guide us where it wishes to. Proposals were made, Kenya, and also the has done some comparison and also some suggestions to where she thinks that we have to exchange perspective on the bill. And once we had finalized the process of the study tour, members will then discuss the bill, you know, make input to the bill to a stage where it is satisfied. It will then go to the National Council of Provinces. The nice thing about this, the Section 75, is that it will not be subject to the 6-week cycle where the provinces will be consulted. The NCOP will call the department, as it did with us, to get a receipt, and then make suggestions which the committee may or may not accept. And if the committee does not accept to adopt the bill, and then it will go for the House to the NA.
Okay. I'm going to request you, assisted by Zilina, to put this in writing in a point form. Something like a communique entry, 24 May 2015, Foreign Service Bill presented to the committee. Second bullet, this is what will happen. Third bullet, this one, or this is what must happen, like consultation with other fiscal departments. And if other departments, you present the defense, home affairs, state security, something like that. Then, and all these processes, and then up to where you say discussion in the MA and then NCOP, then the bill is presented to by the president. So that then, and I see it, and then send it to the members. And members are going to close, or you can mail it to the members. Yeah. So that members can see how this process must unfold. It would be good that the bill be passed in this term of office by 2019. Honorable Kalia, you want to enrich? Do you want to refine the input?
Yes, I just wanted to know the exact subcase where is the radio and printed, and which printed publication.
Okay. Thank you, sir. Okay, we have such quotations to advertise to provincial newspapers and also national newspapers, and also taking into account the issue of covering all South African languages. Which is that I don't have the list with me. I'll share the list with the members. Yes, by email. And then, sir, I would like to seek clarity when I'm meeting now with purpose of preparing for logistics in terms of study tour. Is the committee agreed that we may look at the issue of the study tour?
I proposed it after the elections. I said it would be good to have interactions with parliamentarians in other parliaments of the same committee who have such a brain case. and to look at the strengths and the weaknesses of it. But of course, realistically speaking, nobody is telling until the 15th of August, unless the IEC changes its mind and we we don't have the election. But that was a proposal.
I support that proposal. But regarding my no, it is that the territory is not set as an item yet. And if you are advising that we must undertake a territory, it must be part of the items that we must speak to that matter.
On a point of order, may I address you?
Yes.
It does not have to be a standalone item. You asked for discussion on the input. And I said in order for this committee to apprise itself and apply its mind properly to such a bill, one of the recommendations would be to embark on a study tour. One of the things that also is to do a comparative study that has already started. But cannot be a standalone item. It came out of today's discussion as a recommendation.
No, I think we can find one another on our career. I would still say that because we have not thrown out your proposal of a study talk. All I'm saying is that, as you already indicated, there will be no travel between now and the 3rd of August.
Yeah.
But when we have to undertake a study talk, it must serve as an item, and the official can then speak to that. That we're proposing Kenya, the reason for the one and then the other one. Because the chair must go and speak to the speaker's office, the house chair, for instance, UFRO League. That application, we must say, what is that it talks to the country, financial implications, who will be going there, why, and all of those things. Now, without that having served in the committee, how does one do it? I think we all agree, but it's just that we can just put it in one of our committees and discuss it. Yeah.
It's part of the standard part.
Yeah, yeah.
Because we have been without sharing that part.
Yeah. Okay. With that announcement, I think we should thank the department for the good presentation, very elaborate presentation, and thank the honorable members also for their contribution in the enrichment of the bill. The rest will be attended to through the processes that we can follow. And thank you very much. Maybe let's use this opportunity to wish the members well in the research that will unfold from Friday up to the 3rd of August, because Parliament will be in reserve until the election. So we are going to the battlefield. And also thank our officials for their continuous dutiful support to the work of this committee. We shall meet them after the 3rd of August, and we will then announce them now.
You know what
that answer would be.